But first, Steve Irwin and his wife Terry were a pair of kindred spirits, a flamboyant and memorable couple. When Steve died just over a year ago, he left not just a widow and young family to make sense of his passing, but a challenge that seems to grow larger by the day. How to raise two children caught up in the treacherous currents of both grief and fame. Here with a mother's story, Terry Irwin. Welcome. How are you?
I'm good. I have my deep vein thrombosis socks on because
attractive.
I fly responsibly.
And let me tell you, they look great
Thank
on
you.
Thank you. Yes.
I'm not getting any younger, Andrew.
But your veins are perfect.
That's true.
Can we just get a little bit of your backstory? Because you, long before you met Steve, you were an animal person. Where did this love of animals come from?
Yeah, long before I married Steve, I was a normal person. I think growing up in the United States was an advantage because there's so many people and so much traffic that inevitably my life would collide with wildlife just by seeing them hurt on the road. And while that wasn't an advantage for the wildlife, it gave me the opportunity to experience wildlife rehabilitation at a young age.
I had an image of you taking roadkill home.
Yeah, that's it.
Can I keep it?
Well, if it doesn't survive, we'll cook it up for dinner.
You have a pretty serious wildlife collection, though. I've got a picture of you with Melina, the cougar.
Yes.
I mean, look at the hair on you.
And it was the 80s. Yeah, what can I tell you?
I had the same hair.
What do you mean, had?
Ooh.
Oh, sorry.
I was going to be all sympathetic today, but I don't think so. We've got a photo here, which you know very well. This is a photo of the first time you and Steve met at Australia Zoo. Now, beyond animals, and it was love at first sight for you guys, kindred
Absolutely.
Spirits, opposite sides of the world, similar animal-based lives. Beyond animals, what did you guys have in common?
Those shorts. Wow. Steve would always say to me, I don't know why you fell in love with me. Look at me head. What's with this? This is a night program, isn't it?
It
okay.
is.
Well, he was hot in the cot. What can I tell you?
Well, that's... I was actually going to show you... I'll show you a clip from...
I hope you don't have that clip.
No. There's some stuff on the internet you need to know about.
Okay.
Now, this is... and I checked with you before the show whether you mind me playing a couple of grabs of you and Steve.
Sure.
And this is from when you appeared on the show in 2004, the two of you.
Oh, yeah,
and
great.
It relates to that very matter.
Okie dokie.
I'm going to ask you a wildlife question that I know you'll appreciate. What are his mating habits like?
Well, yeah. Have you got 7 minutes?
Yeah, we got all the time in the world.
Yeah, but it's a wild 7 minutes.
Was he romantic?
Yeah, he was very romantic. And I think it was that genuine romance of not here's a flower and I got to go back to work. It was let's pack up the swags, let's go to the Simpson Desert, up on a jump up, I'll cook you dinner, we'll watch the sunset. You know, I'll tell you how beautiful you are. And that was great. It's very special.
You've written a memoir of Steve, which I assume, even the way you're talking about him now, it's with such fun and such affection. I assume it was a bittersweet experience to write.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not just walking this journey. I was amazed at how many people were affected by the loss of Steve, particularly children. And I think to be able to address that and say, here's who Steve was, and that a hero's message must outlive the hero, and that there were so many special things about him that you may not have known. Here's Steve when we weren't filming, and let me help you take this journey with me, this grief journey.
Did you ever talk with Steve about the sort of risks he took?
See, and I think that's an interesting angle, the risks that he took, because I would analyze that through our whole married life, and I have to tell you, I very infrequently worried about Steve with wildlife because he was that good. And for him, the risks really, in my mind, were more the places he would travel, the modes of transportation, political unrest, disease risk, these sorts of things where he was filming. Wildlife was not my number one concern with him, but certainly after having children, he was much more aware of his own mortality and considerate of it because he wanted to be here for the kids. And yet he always had that feeling something was going to happen early on.
Yeah, he thought he wasn't going to live much beyond 40, is that right?
He never really did. And he wasn't morbid about it or awful about it. He was open and earnest about it. We've got to accomplish everything we can.
When Steve would say this to you, that he didn't think he was going to live past his 40s, how would you react?
Oh, I would always say either a sense of humor response or I would diffuse it. I would say, don't say that because the secret to being a great conservationist is simply living a long time.
Did you deep down believe him? Did you think that he knew what he was saying?
You know, Steve had a real sixth sense about so many things. He had an odd connection with wildlife. He was extraordinarily intuitive with people. I found it all very, I don't know if eerie is the word, but remarkable, certainly.
I'm going to show you another photo. You know well, this was your Christmas card for last year, but
yeah.
This is a photo of the last trip the family took together up to Cape York. Can you mm-hmm. tell me about that trip?
Oh, it was a great trip. Steve said it was the best month he'd ever had. Well, he was with me, so that's a given. Yeah. But
I can think of 7 great minutes in the day.
But, you know, it was really special. And I noticed, even then, there's things I look back on and think, isn't that interesting? At one point, Robert wanted to drive the boat. And Steve goes, crikey, mate, you're 2 years old. I'll teach you how to drive the boat next year. And then all of a sudden, he goes, no, I'll show you now. And showed him how to drive the boat. And we had a great time in the dinghy going around and around and around in the middle of the river. But I appreciated that he took that time. But that trip was so special because it was just the family. We didn't do a lot of filming. We had the opportunity to do a lot of media. And Steve, for whatever reason, said, no, this is just going to be our trip. And I feel bad for people who may have felt they didn't have the opportunity to say goodbye.
When the news came through of Steve's death, you held yourself together for the kids. In this last year, have you been able to let go and truly grieve?
Yeah, you know, I do let go and grieve, and I do try to take on the best advice. Some of the advice I'd gotten was how important it was for the children to see me grieve. And for me personally, my learning process is that it's not. It's quite frightening for my children. So for them to lose their father and then see their mother falling apart wasn't working. So for me personally, I have a fine time talking to the kids about Steve. We watch Steve videos. We have a tear or two together. But I really weep on my own because it works best for my kids.
In what ways have the kids responded? What's different about the ways the two kids have responded?
Bindi coped better than I expected. Robert coped worse than I expected.
How worse? In what way?
Much more emotional and distraught. Talks about him more. Bindi grieves more quietly. Bindi has the advantage of some age. She was 8 years old. And I think from the time Bindi could talk, she would say, I want to be just like my daddy. So to have that continuation of everything that we did with Steve, we've been on another croc research trip. We're still filming. The zoo's going strong. I think that really helped give Bindi that continuing foundation that her life hasn't changed. But for Robert, who spent so much time with Steve and was such a clean slate, I think it was more of an abrupt, wait a minute, I'm 2 years old, I have ownership of my name, I know I'm a boy, I like dinosaurs, I have my mom and dad and my sister, and to take that out of the equation seemed to be more traumatic for Robert. And you know, he's talking more now instead of crying as much. He's getting there.
Robert's not yet 4. Does he understand yet what's happened?
You know, I don't presume to know when a child understands really what goes on, but he has the advantage of living at a zoo where I've never shielded my children from that cycle of life. So I was never the kind of person who replaced the goldfish. I always explained what happened and that it died. And with over 1,000 animals, we've always got something that's being born or hatching or getting old or sick. And this life cycle is not something that's new or frightening.
If you don't mind, I'd like to show just a little bit of the eulogy Bindi delivered at Steve's service.
My daddy was my hero. He was always there for me when I needed him. He listened to me and taught me so many things. But most of all, he was fun. I know that daddy had an important job. He was working to change the world so everyone would love wildlife like he did.
I noticed you didn't look there, you just listened.
Yeah, I'm very proud of her.
She wrote that, right?
Mm-hmm. She wrote it.
Unaided?
Yes, unaided. And at first it was, she tried putting something down on a dictaphone, which didn't work. Then she tried sitting down at a computer and found out that this was very annoying. So she sat down and I helped her with the writing of it and then put it on the computer. But it's her words and her thoughts. And I think that was so important for her. And I let her do that because it was important for her. There were certain things that Bindi embraced and certain things that she didn't want to know about. And I honored that. You know, I let her have her decisions on, you know, what she wanted to do. That's all she wanted to do with the memorial. One speech, sit down, done.
You know that there's been some public unease about how Bindi's presented in dealing with the father's death, that she appears to some to be a child acting out as an adult. Why do you think there's that level of unease?
If you want to talk feedback, I know what's being said about Bindi, and I know the positive, and I just weigh that all up, and I wonder. And Bindi herself is excited about the potential of being a role model, of being someone who wants to be a fit kid, not a couch potato, of loving wildlife, of having goals, of getting kids to stand up and say, no, as I get older, my vote and my lifestyle are going to influence the future of this planet. And for her to have that consideration, I can't get my head around that that's a bad thing.
Her you know? Public life over the last year has been pretty full on. There's been the Nickelodeon stuff and there's been the Bindi, the Jungle Girl. She's going to do a movie. She's just released a rap song, I believe, or is about to release a rap song. I assume you've asked yourself the question along the way, is it too much too soon?
I don't feel that way because this is not something that's just happened. Bindi's been filmed and being filmed with us literally since she was born. And for us as a family, we made the decision just to always be together. And it's been fun. So for her, filming and everything is just very normal and natural. She's not afraid of public speaking. It's normal and part of her life.
It seems to me she's under the twin pressures of grief and fame at this time. Where does a 9-year-old who's also a tourist attraction get time to be themselves?
Yeah, and I don't... Grief is really, really hard, but the filming part is not the pressure. That's the fun. And for Bindi, I measure it by saying, gee, we had a big afternoon. Tomorrow you've got all day at school, so that'll be great. There's no filming. And she always rolls her eyes and says, I'd rather be filming than doing school. I mean, she is a normal kid.
Yeah.
There's no amount of money on earth that could influence me to do anything detrimental for my kids. So she is different than other child actors, and I know them. While they're filming, they have a teacher that runs around after them with flashcards. Bindi has a solid 3 hours of homeschool before doing anything. Her school day always includes extracurricular things like swimming, mixed martial arts, cooking lessons, piano lessons, surfing, horseback riding. She's got
That's a
real
school day?
Well, she's got
I
options.
I want that if, school.
If she's not filming, she's got all the options of the extracurricular things. So for her, it's pretty normal in that regard.
It's interesting you mentioned the homeschool thing, though, because you travel a lot. That's why you homeschool. And I noticed that when she had her 9th birthday early this year, thousands of kids came to Australia Zoo and the Veronicas played. Does she have friends or does she have fans?
Oh, she's definitely got friends. But Bindi's got this one distinct advantage over any Hollywood kid, which is she doesn't live in Hollywood. She lives in Birwa. And I got to tell you, In Birwa, no one gives a rat's patootie who you are. You are judged on your own merits, and we're all, it's a lovely, welcoming, friendly, stereotypical Australian town.
However, you know she's different by the nature of her circumstances and
sure.
by the nature of her fame. And it seems to me you're faced with a difficult challenge as a parent because she's not just your daughter. She's now the centre of a large business empire. You know, there's the Jungle Girl and there's Fit for Kids and there's Bindi Ware International.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you say no to offers of work or
constantly.
Offers of commerce?
I just say no to everything that Bindi does, Australia Zoo and Wildlife Warriors, and she's got her filming. And then she's asked to do some other projects. She's got a project with clothing designing. So there's been Bindi Ware around for like 8 years. And she said, I don't like the colors. I don't like this about the pants. And I go, well, then you need to change that. So at lunch, she'll sit down with the designers and she's all nice. She'll go, excuse me, I don't mean to be a pain, but I was wondering about, and they'll go, spit it out. So she'll change pocket designs. She's got this skirt with big pockets so you can put your rat in one pocket and the food in the other, which I'm sure will be a big hit with every little girl around the world.
It's interesting, though, just going back to the business, I've read that Mattel are interested in a Bindi doll and a range of Bindi dolls and mm-hmm. so on. Where do you draw the line in what you're prepared to do in terms of Bindi being a point of sale? What's the line for you?
Oh, the line for me is just not giving it all away. I'm not just saying to everybody, let's have Bindi everywhere in the universe. We're very controlled with it, and it needs to be about wildlife conservation. So if it's the impossibly perfect figured Barbie doll, that's nuts. It's got to be about wildlife conservation, and it's got to be benefiting conservation.
Let's take a little you time in this interview. When are you personally finding things toughest?
Odd times. It's hard for me coming home after I'm gone for a while, if we're in the States for a couple of weeks, and I come home and the house is so quiet. It's really hard. But, you know, overall, I'm so lucky because I've got such a fulfilled life. My life is an adventure, and I have to understand those hard times and take time out for them. So often when I get back from the States, I take time. I go home on my own and take some time and cry.
Is Steve's presence still strong in the house?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I just think if you have that faith that they're still around, I think he's that angel going, get them, you know, all the time. I'll look at a project or, you know, some battle that we're waging to help protect wildlife, and I'll feel a bit daunted because we both said how lucky we were to find each other and that together we could, you know, accomplish anything.
Have you packed his things away?
I still feel that. Oh, no. His toothbrush is still there. No, I haven't touched anything. That's because I'm nuts. It's somehow comforting for me to have Steve's khakis still in the closet and his toothbrush still in the holder. And
do you think the day will come when you will put them
away? I don't know. I'm not doing that.
Do you sense a danger that Steve might become a saint?
Well, you know, after being married to him for 14 years and there was, you know, a million things that drove me crazy about him, and sometimes I could have just pulled his arms off, but I would have never left him. You know, in so many ways he was. And the convictions he had about wildlife and conservation, and the person you saw on the television really was that. And I don't think Steve would have wanted to be this greater than anybody person. And I was really deeply moved when a state funeral was offered. And I knew that wasn't Steve, just for an example. So Steve would have never wanted himself to be big noted. But he sure would have wanted everything he stood for to have meaning and be continued.
There have been so many responses to Steve's death. Some of them negative. One that stays in my mind is from Jermaine Greer, which was the day after he died, saying that wherever he went, he manhandled animals, that every animal he brandished to the camera was terrified, and that the animal kingdom had finally got its revenge.
Oh, what? Jermaine, what a dag. Isn't she a funny car?
What do you make of a response like that?
Knee-jerk reaction is Jermaine wishes she was as successful in khakis as Steve. But if you examine beyond the potential of just plain jealousy, you have to say, really, what was Steve trying to achieve? We need to be getting closer to wildlife. And Steve was trying to show that. You know how people always used to say, don't feed animals because they'll become dependent? We've learned that's hogwash. If Sizzlers closes, I don't suddenly go, oh my gosh, I'm going to starve. There's no more, where do I forage? I'll figure it out. It's okay to put bird seed in the backyard and leftover bread for the possums. It's okay to bring wildlife closer to you instead of further away. So with someone like Jermaine, I'd say it's nice that we're getting to the point where we're learning, for example, through formal studies, that even if you feed your backyard visiting wildlife anything they wanted, say you did the wrong thing and gave possums sticky buns, we've now got studies that prove the maximum amount of that diet will be 18% of the animal's total diet.
As a mum, does a part of you flinch at the thought of Bindi being exposed more and more to wild animals?
Oh, no. Oh, heck
no. Despite what happened to Steve?
Oh, no. What happened to Steve is like saying he shouldn't have been a chef because he choked to death on a piece of food. It's that absurd. This accident was so random and such a fluke and so bizarre that, I think it happened once in the 1940s and may never happen again. By the same token, Bindi's not feeding crocodiles or, you know, jumping in a pit of vipers or something. The education that Bindi's going to have with wildlife is her life, and she's learning bit by bit. So the actual wrangling of wildlife is such a small percentage of what you do that it's not something I lay awake worrying about.
What if when she turns 18 she says to you, Mum, I want to be an emo and play music. I don't want to be a wildlife warrior.
I don't know that that's possible. I don't know that she would be able to do that because she's so set in her ways. I think whatever she did, it would have to do with wildlife conservation. I really do. I was a lot like her when I was young. I knew what I wanted to do with my life probably from the age of 5 or 6, and I did it.
However, that was something you found within yourself. This is all Bindi has known.
She's got so much worldly knowledge about wildlife. She's got a bead on global warming, and she can talk about shark fin soup, and she understands about how if we lose apex predators, how it affects the whole ecosystem. She's got that advantage, so it's wonderful that she wants to continue with that, but I don't think you're going to sway her from that, besides the fact that she just, you know, worshipped her daddy. I think that's great. A lot of little girls do.
What about you? You've been, as you said, so busy over this last year.
Mm.
And I suspect that that's really helped keep some of the pain at bay because you've been so busy. Can you imagine allowing yourself to fall in love again?
Absolutely not. Not at this point, no. I can't even comprehend it. You know, I would never say never, Andrew, because 20 years from now, you'll sit here and go, I'm just going to run a tape when you said you'd never do this. So, I don't want you doing that to me, but I'll never say never, but I can't imagine it. You know, I don't refer to myself as Steve's widow. I still refer to myself as Steve's wife. And our wedding vows are interesting. I was looking back on those, and we never said, till death do us part. We said, as long as we both shall live. Both. I'm sunk. But it's not hard. You know, realistically, I am profoundly lonely for Steve. I miss Steve. I miss paying out on him. I miss his sense of humor. I miss his playfulness, his fun. You know, so many things. Big, strong guy, full of love and hugs and excitement and a great family man. And there's so many things that I miss. But I miss Steve. I'm not lonely.
As you said, you're spiritual. Steve struggled with that a bit. So I imagine you'll meet again.
Yeah, I do. I really do. I feel that very, very much. And to me, it gives me great peace. It gives me great drive to do the best I can, you know. I want to enter the next life and meet Steve and have him say, good on you, mate, you did good, you know. That'd be wonderful.
Terry Owen, good luck and thank you.
Thanks, mate. Thank you very much.